the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
You've been doing this for a while, radio.
I've been doing it 15 years.
Wow, that's awesome. That is awesome.
That's when, podcasting was in its infancy. Nobody even was hip to podcasting.
Like, what is a podcast, right? You know,
right? Exactly. Yeah, and I knew it. I had caught on when you start seeing, you know, these mainstream broadcasts like CNN and NBC, and they're commentators are breaking off and creating their own podcasts. I'm saying, wow, there's something to this.
Yeah.
So how did you become a doctor of all things? What made you go into medicine?
I wanted to be a doctor since I was in eighth grade. Wow. I wanted to help people and I liked math and science. I didn't have anybody in my family who was a doctor. But I think I had an eighth grade teacher who said that if she wasn't a girl, she would have been a doctor. And that really, like, that drove me. It's like, hey, I can do that then.
Well, my mother is 90 years old. And I'm going to tell you something. She said that boys should be doctors and girls should be nurses. And when she's in the hospital, you know, heaven forbid, she gets the cutest nurses and they're all boys. And I said, see, mom, there's more to it than that. So Brains, we just started chatting. I want to welcome you back to your home right here on the Edge with April Mahoney, the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. And we have a house call. Dr. Renit Lev.
Lev. Yeah.
Dr. Renit Lev. She's the business. You see where it says high truce? Okay, we're going to have a real good conversation about getting high, okay? Because getting high will bring you pretty low. And it's very unfortunate. There's a lot of people out there, especially with this COVID, that are overdoing it, the alcohol, the drugs. There's a lot of people out there that are in serious pain, chronic pain, okay? I get it. And all you want to do is stay ahead of the pain. But what turns into a pain reliever turns into a substance abuse. And another thing we're going to talk about, Brains, is weed. Don't get it twisted. And we're not talking about in zigzags. You got it confused. Weed is not what it used to be. It used to be kind of sexy, a little mystique, you know, a little rebellious, you know, 60s, hippies, let me get the edge off. You know, Native Americans smoked weed forever. But what you understand now is that it's legalized, it's supply and demand. They are making it, they are lacing it, they are genetically modifying it. It's not what you think it is. And I'm gonna have Dr. Renit tell you all about that here on the Edge. So sit up straight, pay attention, and put your substance down while we get a healing. Hello and welcome to On the Edge.
Thank you, April. It's such an honor to be on your show and to be on the Edge.
You are really, really one of my sheroes. As you said, you know, there was a time that there wasn't a lot of women in medicine, but for you to be in medicine and to be also an emergency room doctor, so you see all kinds of stuff. And I know that COVID is coming through there and you're putting your life at risk. And I thank you, because you don't have to do it. You know, you don't have to do it. It's a sacrifice and it's not in vain. It's not in vain.
Thank you. I do feel that my colleagues and people who work, especially at the beginning, we went to work thinking that we could die or end up on a ventilator. And we wrote our last will and testament. Now we know how to protect ourselves and things are better. But I do believe that our heroes, my colleagues are heroes. And I admire what they do. And it's a sacrifice. But, you know, there's nothing else that I'd rather be doing.
Wow. All right. So before we get into people's addictions, I want to ask a little bit about, you know, COVID-19. You are now still practicing medicine in the ER. What's it look like?
Well, I just got off a stretch of 6 days in the emergency department. It wasn't pretty. You know, we have no ICU beds, so we would hold ICU patients in the emergency department. We have a lot of mental health and drugs taking up beds in the emergency department, and COVID. A lot more patients than who have COVID. But I have to tell you, I have intubated, which means putting on a ventilator, more people who overdosed on fentanyl than on COVID. So the pandemic has increased our problem with drugs, not decrease. And that's what we're seeing in the emergency department. I left the emergency department after six shifts with six ambulances lining up the hallway waiting for space because there was no space for them. And I walked out those glass doors and didn't look back.
You know, I'm glad that you didn't look back, but what do we have to look forward to? What lies ahead? You know, everyone thinks that when the clock strikes 12, 2020 is over, and 2021, there's no magic cure because folks is acting ignorant. Yes, I said it, brains. You can get mad if you want to. You know, they're not out here with these masks on and telling you to wash your hands and social distance for shit and giggles. Never had a pandemic like this. It's never been recorded. They don't know what to do. So when you don't know what to do, you try to isolate it. They're doing this. Yes, it's been a long time. Okay.
I agree with you, April. If people just put their masks on right, we wouldn't have to have lockdowns. And I could tell you that because I've been working in the COVID zone, exposed to COVID patients every day, and I haven't caught it because I don't take my mask off. I'm in the emergency department and I don't eat or drink and I don't take it off. It works. So I think the problem when everything happened, the messaging gets screwed up. You know, like I would never call it social distancing. I'd call it physical distancing because we're social. You and I are socializing right now.
Right.
You know, sometimes there's rules that don't quite make sense. And so people throw all the rules out, but masks help you and they help others. And I feel like I'm living proof of that. Otherwise, you know, we would all have it in the hospital.
Well, okay. Let's talk about the mask because I walked from here to the park and I saw and literally counted 20 masks being just disposed of anywhere on the bus stop, on the street, by the lake, in the lake. You know, or the other thing is wash your mask. I've seen some of them that just are just filthy. You know, you go catch something if you don't catch the COVID because you have not washed the cotton picking thing. When you say put it on right, because we do not have the average.
It's not a chin strap.
Okay, right. Okay. So in other words, the proper way to have it is to cover your nose and your mouth.
Right. And there are certain, you know, the neck ones that are very thin, you know, you're not allowed to wear those in a hospital because that doesn't protect you enough. It needs to be not just a one layer fabric. It's supposed to be two layers and supposed to cover your nose and your mouth.
Okay. But the ones that I have are, you know, ones that my daughter sewn for me, they're pretty much, they're a mouth and nose covering.
Yeah. And it's probably like two pieces of fabric. And then,
right. Yeah, right. That's a filter between you and the germ.
Yeah.
And that's all that it takes. I know when I went to China, I saw all these people with masks on and I'm like, ew, nobody can see your pretty face or your smile, but right. I understand.
They had coronavirus. So this is not their first rodeo.
Right. And they know how to do it. And they've also really reduced the amount of infections there as well. Now, I'm going to ask you something. I don't know how much you can say about this or you can't say about this, but there's no way that I personally believe that this is a virus that was started by a nice little family of four that went out to get some wet bats at the market and eat and turn the whole entire world upside down. I have the privilege of knowing some very well-off scientists, you know, up here in San Diego with us at UCSD, and they have been working on COVID for a long time. They just did not have the money and the resources poured into them. So brains, don't think that this this vaccine is just abracadabra. This has been in works for the long time, for a long time. But Dr. Renit, where do you think this come from?
Oh, I wouldn't, I don't feel like I can guess. You know, I don't know if it came from bats from a market or if it was brewing from a, you know, factory or released from a lab in China. I don't know. So I can't guess. It'd be nice. The only reason it would be nice to know is because you'd want to think of prevention. How do we prevent something like this happening in the future? Because, you know, today it's coronavirus 19 and tomorrow it'd be Zika or Ebola or something else. So knowing where things come from is important because then we can prevent the same thing happening in the future. But I can't, I'm not an expert in that.
Okay, well, good. But I still, you know, in my heart of hearts, think that there is more to it than meets the eye. But we can't worry about that now. What we have to do is try to contain it. What also concerns me is that it's morphing. What are some of the signs that you're seeing? I mean, you know, I've heard people talk about extreme back pain, you know, the coughing, the shortness of breath. It seems like every time someone comes down with it, they have different symptoms. There's nothing to really benchmark.
Well, I think everything that you just mentioned goes along with pneumonia. Coughing, shortness of breath, and even back pain. I mean, your lungs are all the way in your back and your front and all around. So so the hallmark signs that we're looking for that would keep you in the hospital is having pneumonia bad enough to where your oxygen is low.
And ventilators. It was very, very unfortunate. My brother died of lung cancer and I saw
him.
I saw him on a ventilator. I would have just gone and told him just to go in and pull the plug on me because it was like, it was just unbelievable. And I had a nurse, I have another nurse that's going to come on and she is a anesthesiologist nurse, recovery nurse when you come from anesthesia. Mm-hmm. And she was telling me too, you know, that just the amount of anesthesia that they have to give someone because they have to put you under to, how do you pronounce the word correct?
Intubate.
To intubate you. But then you have to be woken up at a particular time because, you know, you've got to function. How are these people responding? You know, how are the patients responding? Are they suffering? I hate to use that word, but.
No, if we're putting you on a ventilator, you're not, it's to relieve suffering. It's because you're so short of breath and you can't breathe anymore. That we do that to make you not suffer. So I imagine when you were looking at your brother, it was not a pretty sight, but I don't think he was suffering because he's getting sedation medications and not moving. And that person is not suffering. And we're, you know, we're getting better. We are, you know, 9 months, only 12, almost a year into this. So we're getting better at treatment.
Okay. The vaccine. Now, I'm going to tell you, Black folks are not keen on it.
You know?
No. No. Oh, no. Oh, no. It's an anti-vaccine. But, you know, back in the day, they, you know, in Tuskegee, they injected Black men with the syphilis virus.
That's a horrible story. Horrible.
It's a horror story. And it's not new. And, you know, what really kind of put a bee in my bonnet is the first people that got the injection on nationwide television was a black doctor giving it to a Black nurse. You know, I understand. And I say this to my brothers and sisters, we cannot be afraid of it. They need us to be in these clinical trials because there is genetic differences. There is DNA differences. And if we are going to survive, we need to be a part of the process.
But so April, are you going to get it? Are you going to get the vaccine?
You know, I've been thinking about it. And when my daughter said yes, that she would do it, I said yes, that I would do it too. For a couple reasons. I have a 91-year-old mother. And I say this with all sincerity. You know, she's even said it. She's not going to live forever. So if she doesn't catch it, you know, and I do it. I'm not doing it for her. I'm doing it for me. And I'm afraid of it. You know, I'm really afraid of COVID. The fact of not being able to breathe is horrible. That was the very first gift of life that God poured into us, was the gift of breath. And when you can't breathe, it's horrible. You know, I'm pretty good with the flus and the colds because I don't take the flu shot. Never have, refused to do it. But I have taken other vaccinations because of travel, you know, for malaria and other things when I've traveled in other countries. But I looked at the size of that needle and good Lord, it's huge. That's not,
no, I got the vaccine and I got a little alarm and I thought I got a placebo because I didn't even feel it.
Really?
Yeah. And the next day I got some achiness, like you would. And I actually was happy that I got the achiness. It's like, okay, it's working on me. But yeah, we got the vaccine and then it's two shots. You have to get one, 28 days. And
now, do you take the Pfizer or the Moderna?
We got Pfizer. It's not, when you're offered it, you don't really have a choice. It's whatever they got for you. So I have it. My husband got it. I think my whole family will get it. I am definitely more afraid of COVID than I am of the vaccine. And if the vaccine, the worst thing that'll happen is it doesn't really work and I need to wear a mask for longer. But with COVID, I mean, there's people who die or end up on a ventilator or even not smell for the rest of your life. I don't want that.
And my mother's lost her sense of smell and taste a long time ago, and it's horrible. She just, you know, she just eats because she has that signaling from her stomach that is growling, but she doesn't enjoy her food. So yeah. I try to, you know, make it with more texture, with more color, so that she can remember what it is, but not to be able to smell.
You're such a good daughter. I love that, how you take care of your mom.
Well, girl, the struggle is beautiful. Let me tell you, she will ring the bell.
It's just beautiful.
You know, come here, but I love her, you know, and that's what you do for somebody that you love. And you take care of yourself and you take preventive measures. So now, let's move forward here. You said there's a lot of folks coming in there overdosing on fentanyl. We're going to talk about the weed later, but what's going on with that?
So fentanyl is coming from across the border. It is not the medicine. You know, you get a colonoscopy or you're in the ICU, we give you fentanyl. This is illegal fentanyl, and it's very cheap to make. So it's a good profit margin to the drug dealers. And they're putting it in everything. It's cut in everything. Oh. So 25%, 50% of all cocaine will have fentanyl in it. I had two girls who were using hookah that they thought maybe had cocaine in it. And they would have died if they weren't resuscitated because they got a lethal dose of fentanyl. At 25% of the methamphetamine has fentanyl in it. People come to the emergency department, they're used to feeling all hyped up from meth and they'll think something's wrong. And I'll ask if they want to be tested. I'll check and tell them that they were in fentanyl and their eyes are wide open. And that's good because maybe they will encourage them to stop using. The fake pills that look exactly like oxycodone or hydrocodone or Xanax. And they look, you know, if you Google it, it looks exactly like it. The drug dealers buy the machines to make it look exactly like that. But there's no Xanax, hydrocodone, oxycodone. It's fentanyl and fillers. And just one pill, even 2 grains, like 2 grains of salt would have you drop dead. And our number of deaths from fentanyl have doubled this year compared to last year. So it's another epidemic that we're dealing with in addition to COVID. And it's really sad because some people that are dying are not considered drug addicts. They're out partying, you know, nothing to do during a pandemic and thinking that they're having a good time with friends and they drop dead. And we've even had children. who died from that. So just one pill can kill. And now throughout San Diego, you may see posters up that, you know, really warn people and trying to educate the public about fentanyl.
What is fentanyl? I mean, is it addictive? You know, if you...
Excellent question. Fentanyl is a synthetic opioid. Synthetic means it's made in a lab, right? It's a lot easier to make something in the lab than to grow a bunch of poppy seeds and morphine or heroin. And opioid means it's narcotic opioid like morphine or heroin or oxycodone in that family of painkillers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that the manufacturers of, let me see if I got this right, oxycodone, are in a whole lot of trouble because of the overprescription of it. And, you know, I've got a lot of family on the East Coast, in rural states, in rural parts of the country, and it's on and popping. They are doing everything they can to kind of, again, stay above the pain, and they become addicts, and one thing leads to another, and they OD.
It's very sad. And it's a mistake. It's I would say a medical mistake that we have learned from and hope that we never repeat. Unfortunately, I see this, that we're repeating it, but with marijuana, and we'll get there. But, you know, the medical community, when I was out of medical school, I was told we're not doing enough for pain, that people shouldn't suffer. If you're on a pain, you know, if you come to the hospital on a scale of 1 to 10, how bad is your pain? And my patients would say 20, I'm a 20. And, you know, it's like, okay, you know, looks like you just have a little boo-boo on your finger, but I'll get you, you know, right. We were really peer pressured in a medical way to prescribe. Right. There were even lawsuits for not prescribing, and education that taught people to prescribe, and laws that are still on the books that push doctors to prescribe. And we learned a painful lesson, and we've improved. We've learned from that. That's not happening as much as it had at the peak, which was 2011. Now, you know, we had a prescription opioid epidemic. I'd say we don't have one now anymore. We've improved. And the silver lining in the opioid epidemic is the medical community became engaged in the drug problem. It used to be, oh, you're a drug addict. You're, you know, I don't, you know, what do you want me to do for you? And now, because years ago, the medical community became part of the problem and part of the drug supply chain, we are now engaged in the conversation, in the medicine, in addiction medicine as a profession. So I'm an emergency and an addiction physician. And so we're engaged in finding solutions. And that's, I think, the silver lining of the opioid pill problem.
Okay. But what about people that are in chronic pain? You know, I look at athletes, for example. Okay, football player. You're getting your butt toe up on that floor, you know, on that field. And you are in chronic pain. I mean, you've had a crush this, and you know, my sciatica will mess with me, girl. And I'm just like, give me something for the pain.
That's a great example. So we used to have someone come in the emergency department and with sciatica, and it'd be like, okay, here's some Dilaudid, you know, and now you're like, you know, drugged up and still can't put your pants on. And now if you came in the emergency department with back pain, I'd say, hey, why don't I give you a trigger point injection? You know, or I will put an anesthetic right in your back where you're hurting, and no opioids, you know, better pain relief, nothing addicting. And hey, and patients putting their pants on, they could like, hey, I can straighten up. So we're finding innovations, and, you know, medicine is treated on an individual basis. I can't come on your show and say, hey, everybody get trigger point injections. It's good for everybody. No, it's everything, you know, that's a doctor patient relationship. Customized care. But in general, as a population, we've become very innovative in both in surgery and injuries and using alternatives to opioids. But yeah, there are people who have chronic pain and maybe they need to be on pain meds for the rest of their life. But we're not creating a new generation of Americans who are addicted. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing.
That's good. That is really good. Because, you know, I'll run to the acupuncturist. You know, again, like you said,
that's a great alternative.
I'll get some ointment, You know, it don't smell that pretty, but it works.
Yeah. Lidocaine patches. Lidocaine patches.
Mm-hmm. Just exercise. If you get up off your butt, maybe lose 10, 15 pounds, that might help.
That's awesome.
A lot of things that you can consider and you can do before you run to pop a pill. But popping a pill is clean, is easy. Nobody knows. And again, there's pills to keep you up. There's pills to take you down. And you don't know what you're getting when you get it on the street and you can't afford the heroin or whatever. And then you go to these synthetics. All right. So now let's talk to you weed smokers out here. You think it's cool and you think it's cute. Like I said in the beginning, once upon a time, it might have been. There was three functions that I heard that weed supported. One, to get you happy, get you horny, get you hungry.
I love how you talk, April.
I keep it 100 in my brains. They know I can't do it no other way. Okay, that's what she was doing. And you were eating up everything and you were laughing and you was grooving to the music. And now, all of a sudden, abracadabra, marijuana will help suppress anxiety. It will curb some people's appetite. It will help you when you have children. Now, I know that they don't have the THC in there, but it helps children supposedly that have seizures. I mean, it's a whole barrage. And you walk next to a Starbucks, there's a cannabis store, Starbucks, cannabis store. You know, they're everywhere. So it's a thing brains call supply and demand. Okay, think about that. Once upon a time, cigarettes were cool. Oh, you see Dean Martin and Lucille Ball, and they'd have the long cigarette holders, and everybody was puffing. And then all of a sudden, these big manufacturers said, wow, let's work with the recipe there. It became addicting. Then you came up with cancer and respiratory problems. Please tell my brains, from your perspective as an emergency room physician and an addiction specialist, what's going on with the marijuana?
Well, I love the fact that you talk to your brains. and that's exactly what marijuana does. It affects your brain. And what people need to know about their brain is that their brain is growing until they're in their mid-20s. So even 27, 28, your brain is growing. You reach your maximum height, you know, when you're younger, right? You know, 16 years old, you're not going to get any taller. You would never want to stunt the growth of your height. Why would you want to stunt the growth of your brain? But those, that age, I mean, drive a car, you can go to college, you can serve in the military, but your brain is not done growing and developing until you're 25 or even older. And what that means is by using marijuana, you're stunting that growth. Your myelin and your pathways of your brain, and then last part of the brain to grow is your frontal lobe, the executive decision making, the thinking, the, you know, making right and wrong, thinking about the future. That's the last place to grow. You're stunting that growth. And the other thing about that is, if you use an addicting substance, whether it's alcohol, tobacco, marijuana, or any other drugs, while your brain is still growing, your chance of becoming addicted is 4 to 7 times higher than if I started using marijuana or drugs right now. So the chance of you developing addiction is much higher at that tender age. It's a wonderful time when your brain is growing. That's why you see young people, they learn things, they, you know, whether it's playing an instrument or a new language or exploring. I mean, your brain is a sponge. Put good things in that sponge, not things that stunt your growth.
Yeah. And you know what? Again, tell them about some of the things that you shared with me about the different genetic strains of marijuana and how marijuana is being laced. And then, Braze, I'm going to tell you one of my stories on what happened, what happened to me, what I found out.
Yeah. So the Surgeon General, Dr. Jerome Adams, says it ain't your mama's marijuana. When I was first a doctor 30 years ago, nobody came to the emergency department with marijuana poisoning. That's because it was a different plant. It was 3% THC. THC is the psychoactive component in marijuana. Now, as an emergency department, every single day, every single shift, I treat somebody with marijuana poisoning. And that's because it's a completely different plant. you go to these dispensaries. And on my podcast, I actually went and visited one for the very first time. And these products, I my heart sank. I mean, 60%, 80% THC. When I looked at these bottles, I said, if I use this, it would take me straight to the intensive care unit. Because I've seen people who, you know, their heart just collapses when that THC content is so different. So the plants now and the components now are genetically modified to have high THC. And it's not the same drug anymore.
Can you say that again? Because I don't think they heard you. Turn the volumes up, brains. She said that it is genetically modified.
Yeah.
That means that it's changed.
Absolutely. They are very smart. The growers are, it's not Cheech and Chong who are running these marijuana industries. There's people who are young in suits and they're out for your money. Yeah. And they'll do whatever it takes to, you know, to capitalize on that. And the higher content of THC, the more addicting it is. And that's how you get more customers. You're not going to get regular customers who smoke one cigarette, you know, every other day. You want an addict. And they actually took the business from tobacco. They've learned that if you want people to smoke and buy multiple packs a day, you start young and you get them addicted when they're young. Because if you start smoking at a later age, they don't become a regular customer. So they've learned that playbook and doing it a lot better and fancier now with marijuana.
And Brains, I want you to pay attention to something, because see, I took a little offline survey of people that smoke and that have smoked marijuana before. And they're having respiratory problems, shortness of breath, coming up with, asthma. Never had that before. These pre-rolled joints that they give you, you know, buy one, get one free, of course, to keep you addicted. It's not because you're a good customer, you know, it's to keep you coming. What's in a pre-rolled joint? You know, what is in a plant that has no seeds and has no stem? Let me tell y'all my story real quick. I rolled up on a 420. Okay. For those of you that are square, that is a marijuana celebration that happens every April. Now I'm from South Central LA. Okay. So I know what's going on. I see it and I check it out. Reggae band goes in. I go in. I smell something weird. Said, okay, I get to walking through. I see all of these cases and I see all this marijuana, but I also see something called wax. And the guy goes, oh, come over here, sister. You know, I'll hook you up. You know, you down with the wax? And I was like, no, I'm not down with the wax. What's going on with the wax? Looked like a thing on honeycomb, like a honeycomb kind of thing. Didn't look like hash. Y'all have seen hash. It looks like resin. Okay. But the girl peeled it off with some tweezers. And she had a bong and she put the weed in the bong and then she lit it and it melted down over the weed. Now he says that this is a synthetic weed. She looked like she went into a trance. Her whole body just puffed up and swole up and the big plume of smoke that came out of her mouth. And then she just wiggled down into nothing. I thought she was going to die.
She could have.
It was crazy. It was crazy. And I'm like, what's cool about that? So I said, well, let me go on and get some nachos and get out of here. There's a sign. They done put some THC in the cotton picking nacho cheese. Okay. Everything had THC. I walked past.
420 party. Everything should.
everybody was like zombies in there. I couldn't get my behind out of there quick enough. The reggae band was waxed out. It was crazy. But they also had edibles. And I had a friend. And she's, you know, she's older. She's 78. And I go over to her house and I look at her and she's sitting there. She's in a daze. And I'm like, what's wrong with you, boo? Oh, you know, I have some of those little edibles, those little gummy bears.
But it's not always funny, April. I mean, those people end up in the emergency room.
Exactly, because
I had an older man. The family came in on Thanksgiving and grandpa said to his son, says, you know, I got this diabetes and high blood pressure and look at all these bag of medicines and I can't sleep. And so with all good intentions, grandson gave his grandfather a brownie and he had a brownie and he slept like a baby and thought, oh, well, look at this miracle drug. It works. I couldn't sleep and now I can sleep. But he couldn't wake up either. and he had to be admitted to the hospital with encephalopathy for several days. Grandpa had a liver problem. When your liver doesn't work, everything you put in your body doesn't metabolize and it lasts for a lot longer. And, you know, with good intentions, and that's what I want your brains to learn about, is that I want them to make informed decisions. I'm not telling you to smoke pot or use edibles or not to, but you need to have making informed decisions. If you pick up a cigarette, you know that you can get cancer, you could get emphysema, you can get addicted. And if you still choose to smoke, you're making an informed decision. You may be asked to do it in a corner and not bother other people with your secondhand smoke, but you know what you're doing. The problem now with marijuana, it's, you know, good for everything. It cures cancer. It's all sorts of, you know, snake oil, fake information. And you need to, you're not getting information about heart disease, about psychosis, permanent schizophrenia, addiction, withdrawal, cannabis hyperemesis syndrome. I call it scromiting, screaming and vomiting and terrible pain. And from throwing up because of the marijuana. And if you have that, ask your listeners, ask somebody ever had that, say, do hot showers kind of help you and make it feel better? And they'll say, maybe that's the marijuana. If you just stop using it, then you could feel better. And, you know, we're learning about certain cancers besides lung cancer, testicular cancer, infertility, stillborns. I mean, this is all the stuff that's being hidden for you because we're like the David against Goliath of the big green industry that's for profit at the expense of your health.
And it's taxable. Now, you know, anything that they didn't put a big old tax on, there's some trickery. I hip y'all to the trickery. She talked about cigarettes. Let me give you one more story. Okay, well, yes, I was a cigarette smoker. But I wasn't a heavy smoker. I was, you know, I'd have a pack and it'd last me 2 weeks. But when that anxiety come on, girl, I'd go out and smoke me a cigarette. Well, I got this one particular cigarette. I'm not going to call out the brand. I had an allergic reaction. Every endorphin in my body started to fire. My mouth swole up. My hands started shivering. I told the good Lord, I said, if you let me get from up under this, you don't have to worry about that anymore. So my niece goes, okay, well, you know, you don't want to smoke cigarettes. Let's start vaping. Okay, well.
Like that's going to be healthier.
So we go into the vape store. I see all these different flavors and all these pretty little pipes and gadgets and all this kind of stuff and these big plumes of smoke. Now, again, I got this vision in my mind from the girl at the 420. So I'm not really cool with these big plumes of smoke. And I asked the gentleman, I said, okay, so can you tell me what's in this? He said, well, ma'am, it's only four ingredients. But he couldn't name what the four ingredients were, you know? And I looked at my niece's friend. She went from smoking a joint, then she lit a cigarette, then she had to vape. I don't get it. I don't want any of it.
It's well, they say follow the money. And I think that that's what it is. It's not follow the health, because if they were thinking about public health, they would never have allowed vaping to ever happen, because the studies show that for every one person who maybe quit smoking through vaping, you're creating 80 other adolescents who never would have smoked, and you're creating addicts out of them. So I don't think it makes a public health sense. What's in the vape? What they do is they take the marijuana and the THC and pull it out, extract it. THC by itself has no taste and no smell. So they put the THC there so you could get high, but then they add the terpenes, which gives it the aroma and the taste. The problem is terpenes, when it's combusted, breaks down into all sorts of carcinogens, benzenes, toluene, all sorts of enes that you can't pronounce that are very unhealthy for you. And right before COVID, maybe people don't remember, but we had an epidemic of vaping and 68 people died. Over 2,000 were hospitalized with lung disease related to the vaping.
All right. So now we done put you on blast. Everybody's uncomfortable, okay? You done sat down, push the weed to the side, put your vape down. How do they get help? You know, it just seems like Number one, you have to want it. Brains, you just like me. The cigarettes, I don't want that garbage no more. It just smells so nasty. And even the smell of weed, it just didn't smell like it is. Now you can, my neighbors next door, they'll smoke it. I can just smell it. It's just traveling everywhere. So how do people get help when they have an addiction? First, you got to get your head around it. Is that right?
Yeah. And, you know, April, you did it. You did it with tobacco. And it's not easy. Addiction, first of all, you have to understand what addiction is. Addiction is a chronic relapsing disease of the brain. Chronic means it lasts a long time. Relapsing means like you're going to have a good day and then you get better and then you're going to want to go back to it. It comes back and forth, really like any other disease, right? You have your high blood pressure, your pressure goes up and down. It's not perfect for your whole life. Diabetes, your sugar goes up and down. So it's relapsing and it's a disease of the brain. We found places of your brain that identify addiction, but it is, you can get treatment and there's a lot of good treatments and it depends, you know, what you're addicted to. So it is important to recognize that you have a problem and seek treatment. And throughout, I mean, it depends on where your community. There are resources probably in every community in America. Right now, even for AA meetings or NA meetings, they're available now on Zoom. Different counties in San Diego County, we have a hotline where you can call and figure out where to get help. For opioid addiction, there is what's called MAT, medication-assisted treatment, to get you on medications that can help with opioid addiction. So, you know, again, there's no one size fits all for treatment. But the first thing is to recognize that you have a problem. And again, to go back with your brains, when I see people who are addicted, I ask them, well, you know, do you feel that? Do you feel that your brain is kidnapped? It's hijacked. And when I talk to people who have been off of it or coming off, I'll ask them, did you get your brain back? Mm. You could feel it.
Did you get your brain back? Oh, it makes me want to cry. And there's also help for the enabler, okay? Because you don't want to see your loved ones in pain. And it's not attractive to see your person that you love over in the corner nodding out. You know they're getting high. When you look in your person, that little $40 that you had is gone. When you look over there and the TV's gone, the jewelry's gone. You know, when your kids have to come in and face the anger and the hostility and the abuse, you know that there is something wrong, but there's some help for you too, baby. You know, there's assistance programs that help you get yourself together. You can't change that individual, but you can change yourself and you don't have to be in that situation and you can help that person from afar.
Well, so, April, you need to be a drug prevention spokesperson.
Girl, I just need to keep it real here on the edge, okay? That's what I do. Because it hurts me, you know,
I want to do, if anybody out there is listening and they're around anybody who uses drugs, I want them to have a prescription of naloxone. If you see people nodding off, like you just acted out for us, April, you need to have naloxone. Carrying naloxone for drugs is like carrying an EpiPen for allergies. And you can get one from your doctor. You can ask for it at the pharmacy. But if you need one, you should have a prescription, no question asked. And if you just go to my website, hightruth.com, I'm giving out prescriptions for free because, frankly, they should just be over the counter. And everyone should have one if they're using drugs. And not just heroin or opioids, because fentanyl is in everything, even vape products. Anybody who's using illegal drugs, their family and friends, should have naloxone.
So because that comes with instructions too, to give the person the signs and the symptoms before they, you know, because they might just need a nap. You don't want to inject them with something that's right. But
good thing about naloxone is if they were just taking a nap, it's not going to do anything bad to them. They'll just kind of be mad at you for putting something in their nose and probably, like, you know, push you away for doing that. People who are overdosing, you come, it's kind of like a nose spray and they won't be waking up. And that's kind of a clue.
Well, I'm going to get one and carry it in my car next to my mace.
That's a good idea. If you're around people like that, then you're saving people's lives. I mean, you're saving a life.
Wow. That and your CPR card. You know, that and the COVID and all of this other stuff, I am overwhelmed. You know, I'm high on the truth, but I'm a sober person. And my heart goes out to you. I know, brains, that it is tough. This is something we have never felt. But as it says in my Bible, what don't kill you will make you strong.
I love that attitude of yours, April. You're very inspirational.
Well, I mean, you know, you just really have to do that. You got to forge ahead, because I'm really concerned, not about the people that have died, but us that are left behind, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. do we care enough about ourselves? Not, you know, when I wear my mask, I'm very selfish. I'm caring about me. Mm-hmm. I got to care about me before I can care about you. You know, when you're on the airplane, what do they say? Put your oxygen mask on first. Yep. So you have to take care of yourself. Don't argue with somebody because they want to save their own life. Go on about your business. If you are in chronic pain, there are options. There are choices. Yes, but you got to go through the pain. You know, that's just a part of it. And sometimes pain is a warning sign, and pain is also a sign of healing. So work with it. Dr. Renit, you are just the business. I can't wait to hug you up, okay? But girl, you got to be out that ER and all that, and that COVID environment first.
Yeah, you don't want to hug me.
So, but I'll virtually hug you, and I'll love you, and I'll support you. And thank you so much for coming.
And same here. To you, April. You do such a service for this community, really. And you have such a positive perspective on things. You got your head on, you have your brain on straight. And I love the message that you're giving to your brains and your listeners. And really inspirational. And so it's really an honor to be here and be able to talk to you.
Well, I want them to talk to you more. I want them to follow you, because she's got a podcast, okay? And it's cold-blooded. She's got the leaders in medicine and science and all kind of great stuff. Tell my brains how to get in contact with you. And again, how to contact you with you if they need some help or direction with help. And I'm also going to put the addiction hotline information at the bottom of this interview, because I want you to be healed, brains. I want you to feel good. How do they get in touch with you, Dr. Renit?
So you can reach me through the website, hightruths.com. And you can listen to the podcast, High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, on Apple Podcast, Google, Spotify. And if you like it, you can do 5 stars. It's a new podcast. So I'm just getting established. I haven't been doing this as long as April here, who's a professional. I'm just a doctor, but I do have a mission to make you informed decision makers and to get you help if you need help.
You got more than a mission. You got a calling, and you got your wings, baby. Because again, like I said, this is not for chumps, and you don't have to do it. You don't have to do it. You could do any other thing. You're a smart woman, but you choose to save lives. Respect her, brains. Respect yourself. You know, take that into consideration, that she is putting her life on the line 6 days a week, 12, 16 hours sometime, and then go home to her family and put them in jeopardy for you, not me, for you. Because see, I'm staying home with my mask on. Oh, I adore you from the bottom of my socks, baby, because my heart just...
Me too.
It's just not deep enough. Thank you so much, brains. Go and subscribe to everything. You know, we're not always going to be on your case. Sometimes I'm going to make you laugh. Sometimes I'm going to cook you something good. We have all kinds of great interviews, science, research, love, finance. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Go in and connect with High Truths. Listen to the podcast. It's good. It's got a good flow. You know, you'll love it. So again, thank you so much. And we got to get together soon. Coffee, okay?
Yeah. Post-COVID.
Post-COVID. All right. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, April.
All right.